two Southeast neighbors attend a rally to save Eugene's only hospital. Linda Dugan was shown in KLCC's coverage, holding a sign behind the mayor, joining Linda in the University District on September 11th. Lucy Bambry.
The news that the hospital would be closing was kind of devastating, especially the emergency room. They would triple the time for a lot of people who are in dire medical emergencies, like a kid who's not breathing, someone who's having a heart attack. And for them to have to travel all the way to Riverbend from, let's say, out toward Vinita would be disastrous. Even where my daughter and I live, if you catch all the lights and you're speeding and you have an emergency, it's only like a 7-minute drive to get to the University District facility.
Oh, yeah.
You have to triple that and almost quadruple it to get over to Riverbend, depending on the traffic and depending on, you know, how dire your emergency is. That might be too late for some emergencies, choking child, heart attack, even people with severe asthma attacks. That's not a convenient length to go to get emergency services in this size of a community.
Southeast neighbor Linda Dugan.
My first reaction was outrage and being upset. In addition to all the things Lucy mentioned, there is going to be an earthquake. We're overdue. Those two bridges that we have go out. We have no hospital on this side of the river. Absolutely zero care on this side of the river. But I also had some inner knowledge from a friend that this has been orchestrated and planned, which Mayor Venice agreed with me about. She knew about too. So I was surprised. It was upsetting. But I also have thought that something was up for months. And so that part wasn't surprising. I think probably the two most important department, the ACE, the acute care for the elderly unit. ACE is important, especially for those of us who are baby boomers and going to need places to go. But the emergency here at University District, I've taken my son there, I've gone there, I've taken friends there. It's a much shorter wait. It's about a third of the wait is that there is out at Riverbend. So it's going to put even more at Riverbend. One time when I took a friend not too long ago, it was a 12 to 14 hour wait at Riverbend for emergency. Now, if you were right there having a heart attack, you would get priority. But it's a very long wait there. And I think we waited 4 hours at University District the last time I took somebody there. So the emergency is really important, but also the behavioral health is important too. They're going to open up a few beds at Riverbend. It's totally different than having a whole department. What I see is greed. They're supposed to be a nonprofit. I've been on 4 nonprofit boards. That's not the basic motto of a nonprofit.
Neighborhood board member and concerned Eugenian, Lucy Bambry.
Over and over again by number of speakers, if there was any theme that came through, it was greed, corporate greed. We're the second largest city, as I understand it, in the state. One of the things impressed upon me, 30,000 people in the UVO community, not just students, but faculty, staff, 30,000 people would be affected. They would not have the ability to even walk a couple blocks or don't want to take 3 buses to get over to Peace Health in Springfield. I mean, that's a lot of people for this size of a community.
And being the second largest city, as Lucy mentioned, 171,000 or whatever we are now, people having no hospital and having both hospitals on the other side of the river in Springfield certainly doesn't seem equitable. And Lucy's right. If you're in Vinita, there's nothing else. We're at least closer, the University District, to those people who are west, but there's nothing else.
I think we need to call on the Oregon Health Authority, and I think both city and county folks will support the idea of at least keeping emergency and mental health services open. This affects all of Lane County, not just us. The most astounding thing to me was the number of people, the passion that the nurses union speakers talked about, and the other healthcare workers, the ER workers, the passion that they have for patient care, and how they felt just devastated that Peace Health, as their employer, was kind of turning their back on the patients that these people see. The mental health unit, the ER, very impassioned from the staff and students, and just all the university people who depend on the emergency services there.
Cahoots, I thought, had an excellent speaker, and she pointed out that not only do they get a larger portion of their clients from this side of the river, but that it would be so much longer for them to be able to take people to Riverbend from Eugene, the length of time that it would take them. And I was most impressed when they interviewed on KZI some university district students who not only said that they don't have cars and they don't have access if it's taken away, but also the people, the unhoused, the people living on the street. And so I was glad to hear young people thinking of that. And that is a fact. And that was part of what Cahoots brought up too. If you need to take a bus, if you're even able to do that, I looked it up and it's 3 buses. It's 1.5 hours to get from Eugene to, depending on where you live in Eugene, to get to Riverbend. So 1.5 hour commute on the bus, okay? Which is kind of crazy. I went because I had the opportunity of being available, but also I think it's really important, you know, since high school, I've spent my whole life demonstrating and showing support or against different issues. And I think that's not only our right as American citizens, but I believe in a democracy, it's our duty. And so I will offer some ideas of hope, because I've always got to try to look for some positive and hope, because otherwise it's too depressing. But OHSU was interested in working with U of O to have a teaching facility hospital. You know, they were going to try to have a teaching facility at University District, and even to the level of physicians, not just a nurses training program, but also up to physicians. And to me, that would be great. I would welcome a teaching facility that would perhaps have emergency room and behavioral health and some beds. And option C would be to have another hospital come in and give Peace Health some more competition. And they're all going corporate, huge, huge corporations. I just see it being greed and not really caring about the community. And if we have another option, unless I absolutely would have to, I would vote to not go to Peace Health for anything, because I'm pretty done with them. But they do have state of the heart on certain departments, heart surgeries and other things. They're kind of the leader in the area, so they have a market on it. But the fact that it would take you a long time to get there and you'd probably die on the way, I just think more people need to be outraged. I would really like to see a big campaign writing in, and like Lucy says, maybe some more rallies and demonstrations showing how upset people are. To me, what made it worse is that it's been orchestrated and planned for a long time, and they purposely set things up to lose money at University District Hospital. I don't know, it seems like that should be illegal. That's just my opinion, but I think to calculate things like that is even worse.
Two Southeast neighbors attend the September 11th rally at the University District Hospital and encourage city residents to sign the petition at SaveEugeneshospital.com. This is John Quetzalcoatl Murray for Whole Community News.
On Friday, September 15th, there was a Save Eugene's Hospital town hall meeting at the International Firefighters Association Union Hall in Eugene, Oregon. Neighbors, patients, and local first responders discussed the negative impacts closing University District Hospital will have on the Eugene community. You can get your questions answered and find out how you can help Save Eugene's Only Hospital at SaveEugeneshospital.com. That's SaveEugeneshospital.com.
Once again, my name is Christopher Paula. I am the chair of the bargaining unit for the nurses at Riverbend and University District. I also am on the board of directors for ONA statewide. First of all, I'd like to thank everybody for being here. Really appreciate the showing that we have today. So kind of how this is going to run down, go up, I guess what we're going to be doing today. We have a panel up here that is, they're each going to kind of tell us how the proposed closure of University District is going to affect different parts of our community. So we have firefighters, nurses, people representing CNAs. We have a pretty wide berth of people represented up here. So we're going to have each of them introduce themselves, tell their story, how it affects them. At that point, we'll then open it up for questions, comments from all y'all. So if you have some burning question, keep it in mind. If something pops into your head during our panel discussion, please remember that, and we'll open it up to questions at that point. So I'd like to start off with the other end here.
All right. My name is Matt Calzia. I'm the Director of Nursing Practice and Professional Development at the Oregon Nurses Association. I've also been a nurse at EastHealth Riverbend for like 12 years. I still pick up some shifts there. And at a time, I did some work at University District as well. This closure is going to harm the community. It's disingenuous for EastHealth to imply otherwise. And I want to also expand that this is going to go beyond just Eugene and Lane County. Riverbend is the regional referral center, and they are already overwhelmed. And if there are some ED nurses from Riverbend here today, I hope that they have a chance to kind of explain how overwhelmed the emergency department there is, and then the rest of the hospital is. And by taking services away from downtown and thinking that they can be transferred to Riverbend is a dangerous plan. And this came in an abrupt fashion with just an unrealistic timeline. So I think that's one of the big things to get across is this impact goes at times all the way down to Crescent City. This impacts citizens all over Oregon. And it is just because, you know, they want to save a little bit of money and improve their bond rating. And we need to realize that, right? Like they took a ding on their bond rating and a few months later, things are closing. They're closing in Vancouver. These are a callous group of overpaid executives sitting in Vancouver, Washington. They have no presence in this community. The folks working in University District have a presence in this community. They are our community members. And the folks who go and seek services at UD, that's our community. The people who are making this decision are not in our community. They don't know what impact this has. They're just looking at lines on the spreadsheet. And we see this as a pattern. You know, Riverbend, they don't have the capacity to deal with what is being shut down, and they didn't have the capacity to deal when PeaceHealth shut down urgent care right before a respiratory virus devastated the hospital system in this state last year. And PeaceHealth said, we're shutting down this urgent care, and that went to Riverbend and overwhelmed the nurses there. And we cannot have that happen with the folks coming from UD. We need a plan that this can transition. And that is what every part of this is. PeaceHealth's plan is maybe, you know, we'll build this, we're going to do this, but it's after the timeline goes. So we need to pause and build out a system with all of the community stakeholders at a table together and negotiate a process that is safe and that protects the citizens of this region. And that's what they have to come to the table. They have to work with all of us to get there. They can't just abruptly throw out this arbitrary timeline that puts a risk to our community. So with that, I'll pass it along. I do have one more thing to say, just that this is a trend around the country, and it's a trend in Oregon. We need to make changes to our healthcare system. So going forward, we need to get in this fight now, get them at the table, and tell them they can't do it this way to this community, and then we need to look forward and figure out how we prevent it happening across the state, so that we don't see some of the other damages that healthcare systems are doing in other regions that we've been lucky to avoid, but it's coming here now, and we have to plan, and we have to organize, and we have to prevent that.
Hi everyone, my name is Rajiv Ravishankar. I am the former president of the Graduate Teaching Fellows Federation, which represents graduate employees at the University of Oregon. I just want to say that, you know, it's been really heartwarming to see the public response today, certainly on Monday as well, in the newspapers. Seeing the public response to this community crisis, I really want to say on behalf of my union that we're privileged to stand in solidarity with our union cousins at the Oregon Nurses Association and with many other union community allies. So yesterday, I talked about the impending Peace Health hospital closure in a lecture hall full of our members who were attending a bargaining session. We had, I'd say, easily 100 folks in the room, maybe more, attending. And, our members are totally caught up in our struggle for a living wage and stronger job protections. But obviously, they expressed a deep concern about the situation. We would have, I see a couple of our members here, thank you so much for coming, but we would have a handful of folks here, I think, but we have a bunch of folks actually at a retreat right now, organizing a retreat as we speak. So it's certainly something our union is taking note of and our members are taking note of. It's an issue that hits close to home, as I mentioned on Monday at the press conference, because our last contract negotiation was over, maintaining our union-managed health insurance. And I said there that it's that was an important fight, and we were very close to going on strike. So the issue of healthcare was on the minds of all 1,300 of the people that we represent. But we need facilities to be able to use that insurance, that great insurance that we have. And the Peace Health facility is the closest one to us. A lot of our folks live in Eugene specifically. That's certainly a facility that our members use, and surely the broader campus community uses. We'll also be closely watching what happens with the behavioral health unit, given that mental health care is one of the highest, if not the most utilized parts of our health insurance for our members. And then, in terms of emergency care, just to sort of be a little bit more specific, many of our members have an issue with transportation. A lot of folks come here. They don't have cars, even domestic students, especially international students. And I wanted to highlight, I was reading about this, thinking about how much transportation can be a problem in accessing health insurance. And I saw that, according to the American Hospital Association, 3.6 million people in the U.S. don't obtain medical care due to transportation issues, including lack of vehicle access and long distances, which is exactly what we're talking about here. And like I said, we have about 1,300 graduate employees, about a third of which, a third of whom are graduate international students. And these are folks who are coming from different places, the universities recruiting them to come, and they struggle to manage, the basics in terms of finding housing. They're facing financial pressures, a lot of them are taking loans out, and that's the case even for some domestic students from working class backgrounds. And so you're sort of adding an additional burden to an already overburdened population. Those facing financial and housing challenges. And I started thinking about the scenarios that could play out, where people would have to ask a friend for a ride to the hospital or to get a lift ride to the hospital. And I also thought about situations that have actually played out in Eugene. I remember, within the last couple of years, there's so much traffic on Franklin because of a big problem related to movement. I remember helping a student who was stranded in the middle of campus with bags. And there isn't much institutional support, just you're expected to come take care of your own situation with your family. But I just thought, what if there was an emergency when that whole street was backed up? And then thinking about this weekend, I think this weekend we have a track event and a football game happening at the same time. When you start to think about the scenarios, you really start to wonder what happens in that acute situation where there's a lot of traffic. It's an overburdened community. There's a lot of new property development coming up that's really making parts of town, especially close to campus, very crowded. And how does that play out when people need to access life-saving care? And so I've been sort of worrying about that. I think a lot of our members have been worried about it. And it's come at a time when we don't have a lot of students back yet. We have some grad students are around, but a lot of undergraduates aren't back. I hope there might be some undergraduates in the audience today who could share that experience about what are they thinking as we head into a school year and there's a possible closure of the hospital closest to our university. And I just want to end with, again, something I mentioned on Monday. I really want to, highlight that, I think along the lines of what I've been hearing, I think the last week is this is part of a broader struggle. And I certainly want to highlight that, the voters passed Measure 111. We have a constitutional guarantee that basically enshrines access to affordable health care as a right in the state of Oregon. It's the only state where we have that. And I think it's a matter of fulfilling that obligation. And I think that what we're seeing here is a microcosm, a much bigger fight about what our healthcare system looks like and the fight to make it more public and to really rein in some of the worst private practices that we're seeing and to ensure uninterrupted access. And what I'd like to see is that we fulfill that constitutional obligation with actual regulatory teeth. It's something that the state can do to make sure that these facilities stay open in a city as large as Eugene, and also in a lot of rural communities across the state. So it's certainly our community facing something, but there's something much broader going on in our state and around the country, frankly. And it's really a question of, we're dealing with how much profit does a healthcare company need? How much profit do healthcare executives need versus what do we need as members of the public? And especially those of us among us who really need the care desperately and would lose out a lot by not having access to this facility. So I'll leave it there and I look forward to hearing your questions.
Good afternoon. My name is Chelsea Swift and I'm a crisis worker and medic with Coots. And I'm happy to be back to talk about the proposed closure of University District Hospital. On Monday, I talked about the importance of CAHOOT's relationship with UDH and specifically its staff over the last 30 years, and also highlighted what the loss of the psych side of the ED, what those of us who work in and around hospital call the secure side. Because I just want to be really clear about what we are losing here, and I think one of the most important parts of my job and one of the things I'm most grateful for my job is really understanding how systems work and how to access them and mitigating the harms within those systems, regardless of what they are. So on some of Peace Health's response to the loss of the secure side, the psych beds in the emergency department at UD was that they are keeping the behavioral health unit open for now. And what I'm speaking to is not the behavioral health unit. Most people that CAHOOTs are people who bring themselves to the emergency department in a mental health or behavioral health crisis are accessing are the 11 secure side beds at the University District Hospital. And a very small percentage of those visits result in a behavioral health unit admit. And normally when we're talking about a PHU, a behavioral health unit admit, we're often talking about that decision being made for patients. And often what CAHOOTS is attempting to connect people to is an emergency department site visit to stabilize someone, to get them back into the community before their rights are taken away, before they are in an institutionalized long-term setting like the BHU. The loss of the 11 site beds at UDH is what we are talking about, and that is a tremendous loss that when I say it is impossible to imagine what my job will look like once that is gone, that is what we are talking about. That is where children as young as 5, 6, elderly people in the hundreds I bring to these rooms at the ER, and that is CAHOOTS, that is Eugene Police, Springfield Police, Lane County Sheriffs, Cottage Grove, Junction City, all of the local and rural fire departments. We are all accessing those beds, and that's also the beds that other first responders like police who have the ability to take people's rights away, they are accessing these beds. And I just want to add that I like to share this with people that when I have location services turned on my iPhone, when I would park the CAHOOTS van at UDH, my phone would say to me, "You parked at home," because I spend more time driving to and from UDH than driving to and from my own home. So these things that I'm talking about, obviously, this is based on almost 7 years of experience for me. I hear that there's potentially a plan to carve out a similar psych side of Riverbend Hospital. This means the loss of beds at Riverbend Hospital. The reconstruction of the UDH ER has just finished in the last couple of years, and there's been a lot of intentional work to make that secure side more trauma-informed. losing it in this good working relationship is unbelievable. The current design of the UBH secure side has a separate flex room unit for children that keeps children away from adults and psychosis, screaming. Losing that is unbelievable for children. And lastly, I just want to point out on the workload that I know that a lot of people are anticipating in light of this decision. So losing our friends and our colleagues at UBH and these systems that we have built is absolutely heartbreaking. Looking towards the future of what I expect will become more CAHOOTS work in the lobby of Riverbend when somebody is in crisis because they have now waited 12 hours to be seen for a mental health crisis. That will be a CAHOOTS unit now responding in a building with hundreds of other professionals de-escalating, trying to mitigate harm, while somebody who has called out in the community is now waiting hours for CAHOOTS to respond as we're in a building filled with other staff who are often not equipped or don't have the time to handle these crises. What also really concerns me is that the way that working and poor people will be pitted against each other. When I think about that busy waiting room and I think about coming into the lobby with someone who is in an extreme mental health state, assumptions can be made about their class or working status or identity. And when that person gets triaged ahead of somebody who's been sitting in the lobby for 8 hours in abdominal pain because of behavioral issues, then we're going to turn to each other and blame ourselves, blame other patients, blame CAHOOTS for jumping the line on the tension that will come up between first responders as we're having to make decisions. Who's going to do this transport? Who is going to be willing to wait for 90 minutes to be seen at Riverbend? These are all conflicts and tension that are being put on working class and poor people who rely on the emergency department. And it is crucial that we shift that blame and that decision-making power to the executives who are making these decisions. Thank you.
Still hear me? Hear me in the back? Yeah. All right. So once again, my name is Christopher Paula. I am the chair of the bargaining unit for the nurses at Riverbend and University District. I also am on the board of directors for ONA statewide. First of all, I'd like to thank everybody for being here. Really appreciate the showing that we have today. So kind of how this is going to run down, go up, I guess what we're going to be doing today. We have a panel up here that is, they're each going to kind of tell us how the proposed closure of University District is going to affect different parts of our community. So we have firefighters, nurses, people representing CNAs. We have a pretty wide berth of people represented up here. So we're gonna have each of them introduce themselves, tell their story, how it affects them. At that point, we'll then open it up for questions, comments from all y'all. So if you have some burning question, keep it in mind. If something pops into your head during our panel discussion, please remember that and we'll open it up to questions at that point. Okay. So I'd like to start off with the other end here.
All right. My name is Matt Kelsey. I'm the Director of Nursing Practice and Professional Development at the Oregon Nurses Association. I've also been a nurse at East Health Riverbend for 12 years. I still pick up some shifts there. And at a time, I did some work at University District as well. This closure is going to harm the community. It's disingenuous for Peace Health to imply otherwise. And I want to also expand that this is going to go beyond just Eugene and Lane County. Riverbend is the regional referral center. And they are already overwhelmed. And if there are some ED nurses from Riverbend here today, I hope that they have a chance to kind of explain how overwhelmed the emergency department there is. And then the rest of the hospital is. And by taking services away from downtown and thinking that they can be transferred to Riverbend is a dangerous plan. And this came in an abrupt fashion with just an unrealistic timeline. So I think that's one of the big things to get across is this impact goes at times all the way down to Crescent City. This impacts citizens all over Oregon.
And it is just because, you know, they want to save a little bit of money and improve their bond rating. And we need to realize that, right? Like, they took a ding on their bond rating, and a few months later, things are closing. They're closing in Vancouver. These are a callous group of overpaid executives sitting in Vancouver, Washington. They have no presence in this community. The folks working in University District have a presence in this community. They are our community members. And the folks who go and seek services at UD, that's our community. The people who are making this decision are not in our community. They don't know what impact this has. They're just looking at lines on the spreadsheet. And we see this as a pattern. Riverbend, they don't have the capacity to deal with what is being shut down. And they didn't have the capacity to deal when PeaceHealth shut down an urgent care right before a respiratory virus devastated the hospital system in this state last year. And PeaceHealth said, we're shutting down this urgent care. And that went to Riverbend and overwhelmed the nurses there. And we cannot have that happen with the folks coming from UD. We need a plan that this can transition. And that is what every part of this is. PeaceHealth plan is maybe, you know, we'll build this, we're going to do this, but it's after the timeline goes. So we need to pause and build out a system with all of the community stakeholders at a table together and negotiate a process that is safe and that protects the citizens of this region. And that's what they have to come to the table. They have to work with all of us to get there. They can't just abruptly throw out this arbitrary timeline that puts a risk to our community. So with that, I'll pass it along. I do have one more thing to say, just that this is a trend around the country, and it's a trend in Oregon. We need to make changes to our healthcare system. So going forward, we need to get in this fight now, get them at the table, and tell them they can't do it this way to this community. And then we need to look forward and figure out how we prevent it happening across the state so that we don't see some of the other damages that healthcare systems are doing in other regions that we've been lucky to avoid, but it's coming here now. And we have to plan, and we have to organize, and we have to prevent that.
Hello, my name is Chris Ewert, and I am the president of Lane Professional Firefighters here in Eugene, Springfield. We represent up to 320 members in the surrounding Lane County areas. We also represent members over on the coast in Florence, as well as down in South Lane, the Cottage Grove. So we have a pretty large union of ourselves that really have a small perspective on what this looks like. And so I'm just going to kind of explain a little bit of how things went down when the news broke of University District closing. I probably received close to 300 text messages that day. They thought it was a joke. They're like, you've got to be kidding, because they're already overstaffed, overworked, the wall times are off the charts. We have patients that are sitting there on our gurneys waiting for somewhere to take them, and there's nobody there to take them, no place to take them. And so we sit there. Our ambulances will sit there. They sit at the hospital, waiting. They say there's no way that Riverbend can handle this. There's no way even a fully staffed University District and Riverbend could handle what we're doing. And now we're taking a huge, huge resource out of the middle of the community where the population density going through the roof. This is where we're building. We're building up. We're building more and more residential areas in downtown, but yet we're taking the resource away. Parking. We all know how impossible it is to park downtown. Now you're going to add more people, and there's no way for them to get to the hospital. So what do? They're going to call 911. We're going to take more resources. Now we're going to take and we're going to transport them across town, across the river, over to Springfield. And more than likely, we're going to sit there. They mentioned wall times, sitting in the waiting room, 90 minutes. We have ambulances that will sit on the wall at Riverbend for up to 3 hours, waiting there. An ALS, fully trained paramedic ambulance, sitting and waiting. It's not serving the community. It's sitting there waiting because there's nowhere to put the patients. It can be a non-emergent patient. We just don't have any place to take them. We talk about time. We have sayings in EMS. The time is muscle, time is tissue, and time is death. When you take all of our ambulances and you move them over to Springfield, and they're sitting there at Riverbend, waiting to clear, because our crews do an amazing job of trying to get clear. Those ambulances are now responding, not from within your community, but from across the river. Response times will go up for those ambulances, that the time is critical. We will still have our engines that are able to respond, but those are stabilization units. Those aren't the transports. That's what we need. And so this move, taking this resource out of the center of the community, is a huge blow for us in the EMS system, and a huge blow for the community when it comes to getting that EMS, emergency medical services, immediately in a timely fashion. The commitment of and the well-being of the community remains unwavering by our staff. We will continue to try and figure out what we're going to do next. The timing of this couldn't have been worse. Just on the budget, could have had time to figure out what we're going to do, figure out where we're going to move our money to provide resources. But no, this was an immediate overnight decision by Riverbend. At least that's what they say, right? You know, this was a long-term decision they've been thinking about for a while. They could have helped the community. They could have helped the resources. They could have been a partner, but instead, they just up and pulled out and left. And so, we're gonna work together. We're gonna try and weather the storm. We're gonna try and make this happen. Just understand that for us, we're here for the community. We'll do our best, and we'll continue to come when you guys call for us.
Jocelyn Wenzel, LHU of Programs, and I'm representing Angela CP as the Healthcare Workforce Development Coordinator, as well as the Interim Managing Director. I have a couple of statistics or facts that I want to mention real quick, so I'm just going to get on the point. I think I reiterate the concern and points that were raised already, and I want to point out that this hospital, as I alluded to, serves a population of 170,000 residents, and there's approximately 25,000 emergency rooms and 7,000 admissions annually. So this closure would obviously leave a significant gap in healthcare services that could increase mortality and COVID rates. I say interim manager because I'm also about to enter my third year of med school, and as was mentioned by our did you say time is muscle? I also say time is brain. And so, you know, I know we've been in the middle of a pandemic, but something that comes to mind for me is when you have something acute, like a stroke or a heart attack. And so looking at the UV hospital and looking at the population that it served versus having to drive elsewhere, if you have somebody that goes to the hospital and is looking at a much shorter wait time than Riverbend, right now the wait times over there are 8 to 12 hours, maybe there's one for that. But if you look at a heart attack, for instance, if there's no response within the first 4 hours, we're looking at long-term complications like arrhythmia, heart failure, cardiogenic shock, and or death. And so, the thing that worries me about that is death. The thing that worries me about that is by trying to cut corners and do what is in the interest of an organization, they are looking at increasing the burden on the provider and the organization. So because not being able to respond in a short amount of time and help people in an acute setting will lead to chronic illness, you're going to just look at an increasing number of hospital visits, right? So you're going to have people bigger for it because now they have a huge amount of risk in their heart and shock. And then we look at stroke. Similarly, if there's something called the golden hour, and if you're not able to respond in that first hour, you look at radiating and necrosis and death of surrounding brain tissue from the site of the MRI of the stroke. And so that concerns me. The other thing that concerns me is knowing that the U of O is serving 20,000 students, so where are those students going to go now? I've done work with suicide prevention hotlines, and I just think of how mental illness and suicide is super high among students who are in a high-stress environment. And when you're in a state of crisis, you have to walk around the corner and say, I need help. It's going to be a lot quicker than if you have to cry 15, 30 minutes away and wait for 8 to 12 hours in a waiting room, and it's reinforced to you if you don't have an emergency. waiting room, just a number. And who's going to notice if you leave the waiting room? Because that just means somebody else is getting served. That's not what you want to be told when you're in crisis and you're trying to say, I do need help. I also think, you know, as a med student, I've done medical interpreting my pre-med years, and I wonder about BIPOC and ESL patients coming in and the health staff recognizing, oh, this person needs one more resource. Well, I'm just going to turn them out to the department and make them wait a little longer. Now I have to call in an interpreter at the time for that. I'm going to deal with this other emergency case. And they're just saying their stomach hurts from my rudimentary Spanish that I can understand. Oh, wait, it's not just their stomach hurting, it's a dissecting triple, you know, abdominal organic or something like that. And so I think often things can get lost in translation. Often, unfortunately, in a crisis, people, if there's more resource needed, people will either make that person wait longer or they will get a compromise on resources. They'll say, who speaks Spanish? Just get any staff member. And that's not the kind of care that people deserve. So my concern from this is how well students, BIPOC, and other ethnic minority groups and underrepresented, underserved populations like the Afghan House population of Jean be affected by this. And it's pretty scary. I could go on, but there's just one question there, but that's just an
Jesus, mother. first time I've ever been here. I've heard so much about something from our new album, Drama. And it's called Into the Lens.
I am